Welcome, welcome, coaches, teachers, parents, and medical professionals. You are listening to Larissa Mills and my podcast, At the Table. I am the founder of iParentGen.com. And today and every day, we are going to discuss how families and schools are managing technology and raising children and teaching them. We are also going to listen to how technology is impacting athletes and their level of sport. So let's get to it. Stay tuned and please call in with your questions or join us on Facebook or follow us on Instagram. But parents, you are not alone. There are courses, articles, and videos on my website. Please sign up for free. So let's get listening.
Hello there, Mr. Andrew Cannon. How are you there? And you're in Rome today.
Hello, Larissa. I am wonderful in Rome. Thank you. It's the most wonderful place to be in September. Gorgeous sunshine, not too hot, not too many tourists. Yeah, no, absolutely beautiful.
I wondered how many tourists there would be.
Yeah, not too many considering. So, you know, it's still recovering, you know, obviously from the impact of the pandemic. So, you know, I talked with the people in the hotel and they're fingers crossed that October will pick up.
So here's a personal question for you, Andrew. How many calories of gelato have you actually eaten?
Unfortunately, I haven't had one ice cream yet.
Oh my goodness. I would be in there to chocolate gelato every day, make sure I get my 20,000 steps in, and then I can have one.
Yeah, no, definitely. Pistachio is my flavor that I'll be going for, and that's on my agenda for tomorrow morning, so...
Oh,
okay. I won't get my 20,000 steps in for sure. I'll eat the ice cream first and then take the steps
and do it for sure. Well, welcome to the Parent Talk today. Thank on our you. Parenting podcast. We have Andrew Cannon, who is from Quandrum, and he is all about finding the joy in what we're doing and how we're going to connect with that. So just a little brief overview. Andrew is on a mission to empower people to joy-filled lives, which I really love. And for parents, this is really pivotal because there is joy in our days. And he has, in his 30 years experience in helping corporations, understanding humans. Andrew is now using his talents and passion to help people find joy in their lives and to bring joy into the lives of others, which I think is so crucial right now in helping other people as well and finding connection. He is the founder of Quandrum, a company which is building a tech platform as a digital home for the joyful living community. Wonderful. And you are the founder of the Art and Science of Joy, which provides people with knowledge, inspiration, and tools to live more joy-filled lives across the four pillars of joy, which I would love you to explain. So well-being, belonging, impact, and fun. Well, I have to say thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for asking me, Larissa. It's a pleasure.
So where did you come up with this idea of joy and helping others find joy? Was there a moment that this just went off? Or
It was really a switch, which was caused by my business partner, Rike in Norway, who really, you know, the mother of Quandrum and her inspiration. I knew in my life that, you know, I wasn't satisfied with the purpose that I was on, right, that I wanted to change to, you know, away from the sort of corporate world to having more purpose in what I was doing. But I didn't really have a clear vision at that point, right, as to what exactly it would be. And sort of by magic or fate, mm-hmm, I bumped into Rike and she explained to me about her vision. And I said, well, yeah, I can totally see how to turn that into a business, how to make that into something that will not just be a dream, but right, a dream that could become a reality for so many people across the world. And so we started working on it, you know, now about 2 years ago on the concept and the business.
Right. And today, parents, we have Andrew here who's going to help explain how we can implement that and the Art and Science of Joy and his initiative. Because as we know, it's a hard time sometimes when you're alone in your parenting, raising kids and understanding that there is hardships in being a parent. I've been there. I had 3 kids that didn't sleep. A husband was shift work. I had 3 difficult kids in terms of sleep and eating and all their other fun stuff, but I found joy in their smiles and I found joy in their moments. And that's what helped. And I had to figure out what would make me happier. And I found, you know what, I started mommy groups and I had my Pilates business and we just started Pilates with babies. And I started a whole business and collaborating in that prenatal way in which we were all just hanging out and just enjoying the kids on the grass playing and them learning how to make friends. And it just went like that. So listeners, Andrew is going to share with us a little bit about his initiative. Could you talk, Andrew, to how parents can fill their day with these joy superpowers and how we can help our children with that?
Yeah, definitely. I think maybe to take a step back to talk a little bit about the pillars and how this works out, because you know, what we wanted to do is to provide a framework. And there are many frameworks out there, particularly around the concept of happiness, which for us was a bit too narrow, I think, in terms of when we consider joy. We consider it much more broadly through these four pillars of well-being, belonging, impact. And that's an impact both on other people as well as on the planet, and fun. Right, shouldn't be too serious either. And what we wanted to do was to create, if you're in the Nordics, you would call it a smorgasbord. It's a wonderful of different tools or superpowers that you can use under these four pillars to create your own joyful cocktail or your own joy salad made up of these different ingredients. And not just prescribe that everybody has to do this the same way. Right? So, you know, when we dig down into the superpowers, when we did all the research, we ended up probably with 160 plus ingredients that people can deploy across these four pillars. And, you know, it's obviously not everybody's going to use all of those, but we want to give people the opportunity to explore. To feel, hey, what if I wanted to talk about gratitude? You know, would gratitude be a thing for me? Or am I pessimistic? Should I learn to be more optimistic? So everybody has to evaluate where they are today on their own journey and then decide amongst these different ingredients which ones they want to create as superpowers.
That you're going to feel out. And if those don't work, then take a few ingredients out and try a new recipe. Is that what you're, I kind of get that metaphor there. I love
that. And it's where you are today, right? Because your ingredients that you had pre-kids, for example, are going to be probably very different from your toddler ingredients to what they are when you're going to teens, for example. You're going to lead a very different.
Patience and gratitude.
Exactly. And your kids are going to need different tools. So, you know, I think this isn't just about the tools for the parents. It's about the tools for the kids as well and empowering them to develop these superpowers as children, these awareness, these skills, which can then help them with the future life. You know, I think if you looked at mental health, for example, I think I read
on that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, almost all of the damage is done by the time the people are 24, right? So, you know, it's so important, the role of parents to help their kids have these tools, these ingredients that they can then use when the hard times come, because you can't avoid hard times in your life.
Yeah,
for sure. You can't protect your children.
Obviously, you're in one, right?
Exactly. So, you know, that's really the basis of what we're trying to do here. And through the Joy Superpower series, it's really about shining a light each week on one of these superpowers, bringing on a guest who's an expert, helping them share the tips. We explore the science because some people just don't like to see the arty side of it, but they want to understand that this actually is scientific evidence behind this.
And neuroscience. Mostly what I find when we're talking about things like this, it's how our brains are working through the linguistic part, the feelings part, and how we're going to categorize those in filing cabinets and organize them, and where we're going to pull out that drawer and use that power. Oh, no, wait, I can't use that power here. This one will be more effective. But we will have had more experience as we age to take one of those pillars and one of those ingredients to go, oh, I know what works here. That won't work for me here. I'm going to use these guys and I'm good. Mm. And you're going to feel more empowered and confident, and so will the kids.
Very much so.
Yeah,
that's what you're saying.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. It's a two-way thing. And that I think will bring a lot of joy to the parents when they can get to the stage to do this together with the kids. And to be, you know, open and transparent in this relationship that, yeah, I have a bad day today, right? And it's nothing to do with the kids necessarily, even, right? And it's just you, you're human, and it's okay to be human as a parent.
Yep.
And I think, and depending obviously on the age of the children, how you deal with that. But, you know, I think it's, we sometimes protect them too much.
And I find in my client base that parents have this perfectionism and they want to be like the perfect parent. And I have to say right off the bat, I'm not a perfect parent. In fact, I probably screwed up the other day. Yeah, I made a mistake and I had to acknowledge it, talk about it. And it was a total misunderstanding, and where, you know, someone ate something in the house and you have to do the investigation. I'm like, well, I told you not to eat the chocolate chips. We've been going through this for a year. I'm like, okay, well, I went to go make something and they were disappeared magically. Right. And it was not a big one. I'm like, okay, well, where did they go? And we had to get to the point and found out that someone had been taking like handfuls of the chocolate chips all the time. And he goes, I just can't help it. And I'm like, he goes, I said, well, you know, this, we've warned you that these are for baking and these are for here and you can have your treat. You've got lots of treats. He goes, no, mom, but I really like those. And I'm like, well, I know that you enjoy them and I'm glad that you enjoy them. Just remember that when we go to make our energy bites or our muffins or anything like that, I don't have time to go to the store and back. So can you leave me some? Just have a little bit and just leave me, like leave mom some. And then remember, there's your snack. So it's all about reminders. I just had to go back. Here's your snack cupboard. Here's your thing. Here you go. But I had pinned the little thievery on the older one, but it was actually the younger one. And you know, and the older one is laughing. He's like, not me this time. He's like, no way. Oh yeah, he was loving that. It was funny because I'm like, we just got home from the cottage, as I was telling you, and I was about to make things for school, so I had it all organized, and then the whole thing, I'm talking, Andrew, this thing of chocolate chips this big, gone.
Well, there's a wonderful song that I can recommend to you, like, to use.
Holy crap, are you not, how could you do that? Sugar, like, that's a lot of sugar.
That's a lot of sugar. There's a wonderful song that I can recommend to you to use in that situation by a wonderful singer called Lisa Loeb. And the song is Who Stole the Cookies from the Cookie Jar?
Well, we use that a lot in our house.
Yeah. And at the end of it, whoever did it, it was okay because you share it. Right?
Let me download it. So when he walks into the kitchen, I can.
Yeah. And then all the animals go through. It wasn't the penguin. It wasn't the kangaroo. It wasn't the giraffe. But then I can't remember. I think it was the kangaroo, maybe. But then he shares the cookies, right? Who wants one? Yummy, yummy.
Right. Well, along those lines, in using those superpowers and pillars and ingredients, which I really like the metaphor and the visualization for parents and coaches, if you will, or corporate employees who are all listening. What tips would you suggest for parents to kind of like sneak in these moments and smiles and moments of joy in your day when, you know, you are home with two kids or you are dealing with tough teenagers? What's your vibe? What's your initiative there? Like,
yeah, it's interesting. I think my vibe is to, as I say, to be authentic and honest and involve them in this journey. So, you know, I have the concept of people creating sort of a joyful experience together with their children, and they can do different things together. For example, you know, one of the first joy superpower we covered was gratitude. as part of well-being. And we know how important to be grateful is. And we had, you know, Chris Schemmer, the USA Today's gratitude guru, on the show. And he has this special question, which is, if you could give thanks to one person to whom you haven't given enough credit, who would that be? Mm. Right. So that's the sort of thing you could sit down with your child and just say, hey, today, let's think about who are we thankful for? And who haven't we really thanked enough recently? And it could be, you know, the person in the shop, or it could be, you know, grandma, whatever, but haven't really given enough credit. And then to add spice to it, say, okay, well, let's give that person a gratitude visit, right? Either that's in person or virtual, right? Get on Zoom and just say, you know, together, you and the kid, yeah, take the time out together, take 5 minutes. That's all it takes. Just give the person a call and say, hey, I'm really grateful for you for this reason. I'd like to, you know, thank you for being a part of my life and our lives. Mm-hmm. And that's just so empowering for you and the child. Both you get this hit and the other person gets this hit of emotional well-being. And yeah, and it just feels so good to have done that. And so those are just the little 5-minute things you can do.
Because we do that we have two very older neighbors.
Right.
So during these times, we've been making them soup. And the kids put the soup across because he can't get out of his driveway in the winter.
Right.
You know? And sometimes if he needs something in the grocery store, he'll call me. And so we do these things. And the kids now are like, Mom, is it Tom's grocery day?
Right.
Mom, I think Janet needs me to walk the dog. So now the kids are thinking because we've participated together and making someone else feel important. Validated. And I want my kids to feel that
in a fun way. You've done it in a fun way, and therefore the kids want to do it. It's not a reward punishment mechanism.
They like it, right? Because these people have let us, you know, use their pool or been kind, and they do it. They just walk the neighbor's dog and they just do it. But it's the other day she's like, Mom, I'm making cookies. I'll go give Janet some cookies and John because they let us swim so much in their pool. It was like a thought.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, that's a great idea. Just run it down. Good on you. They'll really be grateful for that. So it's how you're saying how I speak to them and involve them, and then applying it by, I like that.
Together. It's a part of this belonging, doing it together. And it's doing it fine. I think, you know, if I had a tip to say for parents who are struggling, it's to focus first on the pillar of fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
To make sure that whatever you're doing together with the kids, there's a number of fun superpowers you can do together, you know, is probably the easiest one. For example, nature, being in nature.
Oh, yeah.
Right. That is such a superpower that you can easily do. You don't need to go to Yosemite, you know, or Yellowstone. You can go to the local park. You can go to the, you know, tree outside your house.
Yep.
And that's enough. And it's about being still in nature with your children, not about performing. You know, quite often we spend the time in nature that we do. It's like jogging or playing football. And this is all about, no, let's just be with nature. We are one with nature. We are part of nature. And if we can redevelop that connection together with us and our children.
Like it too. If we can connect the kids.
No, for sure, for sure.
Earth and we're working on an initiative for parents to do that exact thing. Because of climate change and pollution and whatnot. And the kids, I find the more we get kids outside, even in classrooms and education, and people to take those, we call them tech breaks.
Mm.
They actually, if we are connected to nature and we feel more grounded, we actually, for some reason, our nervous system is calmed.
Very much so. Very much so. It has a massive impact.
It's a double win.
Mm. Yeah. Win for the nature, but also win for ourselves in terms of the improvement in cognitive functioning.
Oh, absolutely.
For example, you know, it makes you just so much aware, so much stronger as a person when you feel that you're part of this wholeness of nature. And it's hard when people are struggling to do that. But again, repetition helps here, you know, the first time you go out, it feels a bit stupid, right? Maybe just looking at the tree and thinking, I'm one with nature, right? And doing that. But the second time, third time, it starts to become, having you start to see the benefits of doing that. So it's not really just giving up after the first time. Well, that didn't work. You know, we're going back to McDonald's now.
Yeah. It's also going to the beach, finding rocks. Like, we all took our little snorkel masks and we found the rocks. So I could not believe my little guy, the little guy's 10, the older one's 18. They were like, oh no, come here. They got him. And I was just watching my kids having my joyful moment, help each other, share the mass, take care of each other in the waves, because the waves, they didn't want the little one gone in the undertow. And they were all under the water looking for, because there's fossils and there's little pretty rocks. And then what they did, they brought them all home. I didn't even ask what they were doing with them. I just wanted to see what they were doing with them.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, you put them in the vase and put it on the table. What a great idea for people to see what is at the beach.
Right.
And they each put their own favorite rocks in. And I was like, I couldn't have asked for a better day. You know, it was 40 degrees here. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, but I'd say it's 100. It'd be 100. Wow.
Yeah.
We were roasting and you literally had to be submerged in water the whole day. But I found that I was like, wow, I was thinking to myself, this is a win for nature, a win for their bonding, a win for their own empathy.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just that moment. Now it did take extra time for us to go to another place, put the moment, but that effort, well worth it. That is a moment they will never forget. So we spent hours there in the water.
Right. Yeah. And that's it. Right. So you can do these, what I would call that sort of a bigger thing, sort of make it an adventure.
Yeah.
And bond that way, but then also just integrate it in small little doses into daily life, you know, to go to your local park and notice how the nature changes each week. Right. So sort of engage your kid in a conversation about, hey, look, that tree is you know, it's now a little bit taller than it was. Let's measure it against you, for example, and we can see how your development and the tree's development are going to move over the next few years or whatever. You know, you turn it into something, you realize that the kids are growing, nature's growing, you're integrated into that. So nature's definitely one. Reading is another superpower. I can't stress the importance of the parents, not only for their own well-being, because, you know, there's so much evidence showing the power of reading, especially during the pandemic, as a way of escaping in a way, but it's so much more powerful than going on the internet or, you know, TV, in terms of the power that it gives you, the regenerative, the restorative power of reading. But I would say it's the number one gift you can give your kids. Right, in terms of a skill, it's to give them a love for reading.
Yeah.
You know, because that gives them curiosity.
You just said that kids who don't get the bond of security and attachment by the age of eight, this is the British Pediatricians Association. If they don't get that bond by 8 or 9, and they don't feel that security of attachment, like mom and dad or whoever, or dad is there. And especially they focused that article on nighttime cuddling and reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, I swear, my kids, the dopamine and the oxytocin, they just start talking and telling you stuff. And it is the best few minutes before I even get so relaxed that I find my brain wants to go to sleep at that
time. Right. Okay. So I'm going to ask a question now, Larissa. What was the number one show on Netflix in 2020?
Because I know the math. Bridgerton.
No, something called Coco Melon.
Oh, okay. I've heard. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Right, which is a program basically the nursery rhymes for kids, right? And that's the number one show.
Good. I like hearing that.
But the downside is when we talk with you know, we talked a lot with Kim Jocelyn Dixon on this, who's done a lot of study in this area, tells that it's good, but it doesn't replace a parent putting a child on their lap and reading them the nursery lines. And unfortunately, too many parents are now using it as a surrogate
Yeah, they're using a real robot.
Right? So, for example, it's number one show because parents put it in the crib, right? So it's on for 12 hours during the night playing, right? This iPad in a child's crib.
Don't tell me that.
And that's detrimental.
Don't tell me that. I can't.
Sorry.
All electronics out of the room, parents. Number one, yeah. They have to soothe themselves.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Like during the day, like if the, I thought I remember reading that it's timed, but if it's at nighttime, not a good idea. It's definitely better to read, cuddle, give them security, and they'll go out.
Yeah, and especially that bedtime moment that you talked about. It's that one where they really need to be in that parent's lap.
Yeah.
Just even if you're gonna tell the same story over and over again, if you only know, you know, one nursery rhyme, that's still so much better than just giving them the iPad and saying, hey, oh, here's Cocomelon, and I'm gonna go and, you know,
I've never
watch
done that.
My TV.
I've never done that. And considering the addictive social formulas that movies and cinemas and as you know, I think you know I'm writing a documentary and I'm learning more about film. And the animator that I'm working with, who I can't say who he worked for, let's say this major company is making shows to be highly addictive.
Yeah.
I was shocked. I almost was like, I didn't want to talk to anyone for a week. I was like, what? How could this large company that preaches about children and morals and fables and wonderful stories be doing this? I was blown away.
Yeah, and it's business, you know, unfortunately.
I know.
It is. So that's probably for another podcast. But the message I just want to give to parents is that they cannot think that a digital device
is
a surrogate for them.
Never.
Right. And the kids need that.
Who do you want your child to come to when you have problems?
Right.
A device? Because they're not equipped mentally to cope with many of which they're seeing or understand, or you.
Yeah.
And you're better equipped.
And I understand the challenges here. You know, I was in the restaurant the other week where there was a mother who had two young children, both preschool children, and she was having to breastfeed the younger one. Yeah. And so the other one sort of starts screaming for attention. And obviously in that situation, the parent just reaches for a phone and gives the phone to the child, and the child stops screaming. Right. Problem solved.
For now.
In that moment. Right. And so that's what the parent's thinking about. How will I get through this moment? I need to stop my child screaming in the restaurant, instead of thinking in the long-term impact that this behavior is having. So this preempting of trouble by, you know, the way you're bringing these joy superpowers into your own life and into the lives of your children, help prevent that situation from happening in the first place.
Exactly.
So that's one. But as I say, reading, not only for the kid, but also for yourself, we know it enhances quality of sleep. It lowers rates of depression, improves creativity and empathy. And I suppose creativity is the third fun tip I would give to parents is to spend time doing creative things with the kids. And my own personal experience came with that during lockdown, when I had the pleasure of homeschooling my own then 7-year-old on this. And just the fun we had with a thing called Art for Kids. And and learning how to draw together. I was useless at drawing.
Andrew, do you have any stick drawings you'd like to share?
Yeah, unfortunately, probably they would be that. But now I'm actually quite, I could do a mean giraffe with purple spots.
There you go.
And to doing that something together, you know, when you're taking yourself down to the child's age in a way to say, hey, you know, I'm going to draw like a 4-year-old today, or an 8-year-old or a 12-year-old, right? And you're not teaching them anything. There's no judgment in this creative process. There's just making a mess, having fun.
Did you get,
and that's what they want.
And drew like different heads on different bodies.
Then
we made dinosaurs with different colors, and I literally will just go get the crayon box, bring it over to the table, and guess who comes over? The 18-year-old, the 14-year-old boy.
Right.
And they'll start music. They'll put music on.
Mm.
And this was more in lockdown, right? When we had to really fill our days. And
yeah.
But they did that on the weekends. And the little one, my other daughter draws paint, like she paints. She's wonderful. But she was teaching him, you know, the game that when we were little, it was like spiroglyphics, where you have the circle and you put the pencil in.
Yeah.
They were obsessed with that and drawing patterns for like a week. But what was neat is when I came over, what they wanted me to color. And I've always colored with the kids. Like we had a hockey backpack. And instead of, and what we always advise parents is if you're going to a soccer game or a hockey game, have a little backpack of creativity in it.
Yeah.
What would you like to get out? A puzzle, a book, coloring by numbers, a little bit of a snack and a water bottle. And I just plucked that in my son's backpack while the other ones were at their sports. And he just stuck with his backpack and he stayed in the stands with me or by my side. And he would just be creative instead of the other people who are just shoving a device down their throat.
Right. And when you combine that with like reading, one of the fun things I like to do with my daughter when we're in the sauna is we tell stories just by one person telling a sentence and the other person continues the next and so on and so on. And it's just, you don't need anything. You don't need material things with you to do that. Right.
Nope.
You just need to have no judgment.
Purple
no judgment.
Went over to the green dinosaur's house and they decided to eat fishies together.
That's right. And you as a parent can't say, well, that's stupid. Nobody's going to believe that, right?
You carry on. You got to get into it.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you're both laughing and it's a wonderful, small, joyful moment that you've added to both of your lives. And that's the key.
They remember all those things.
They do. And you know, I think there's a quote by Carl Jung, which is, you know, it's children are educated by what the grown up is, not by his talk. That's so important, I think, for parents to think about. Your parents are watching you. Your kids are watching you all the time. Right? They might not talk to you, but they're watching you. And to have that knowledge that your own behavior is going to impact your kids so much. Right. So as a parent, yes, focus on the kids. But equally, or perhaps even more important, is to focus on yourself, on developing your own self-love, your own well-being, that you can then give them unconditional love because you're well and healthy yourself. We know that if a parent has anxiety, depression, it's really hard to say, hey, kids, we're going to be joyful today.
Yeah,
you know, when you're not feeling it yourself. So, you know, we really want parents to first think about these superpowers of, how do I help myself? And then at the same time, well, how do I then translate that to also help my kids? But don't just try and help your kids if you're suffering yourself.
Now, the fourth pillar, can you explain how we could work with that as parents?
Which pillar?
You did, what was it? We did gratitude. I think we need to do emotional.
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about
well-being
in more general. Yes. So
nature. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So we did a bit about the fun and we touched through gratitude on a bit of the well-being, but I really want to focus on the well-being more because it is so important, you know, coming out of the pandemic or not coming out, depending where you are in the world. But, you know, there's so much talk about emotional well-being challenges. And when we look at the pillar of well-being, we break it down into the four pillars of spiritual well-being, emotional well-being, mental well-being, and physical well-being. And I'm going to park spiritual well-being to the side for now. But if we looked at emotional well-being, you know, we find that it's very much the superpowers of physical and mental well-being that give you a good emotional well-being. You shouldn't focus necessarily on the anxiety or focus on the depression, but focus on the tools which either make you feel good or bad. So, you know, physical well-being, you could talk about sleep. We're not going to do that today, but you know the value of sleep as a parent and how valuable that is. And so that gives you mental, emotional well-being. But if we looked at mental well-being, I think there are skills that both parents and children can develop to become more joyful. And I think part of the problem is from the research that we've sort of done in this area is that many parents sort of get sort of caught up in that the kids are not willing to do stuff, right? The kids aren't willing. And I think science shows this, that kids naturally are willing, but they don't have the skills. Right? It's the skills that they lack, not the willingness, right? So if a parent focuses on the willingness, what they do is they then get into this behavior pattern of using a series of rewards and punishments to help their kids make better choices.
Right.
But if the kid doesn't have the skills to make good choices, that isn't going to work, because they don't really know on their own. All they know is, if I do something, am I going to get reward or punished for this?
Right.
You know, that's the sort of the type of sort of environment that they fear. You know, is this going to be a reward thing? Is this going to be a punishment thing? What's going to happen next?
Literally thinking about it constantly in the back of their
head. Yeah. Instead of saying, okay, kids, we know you want to be good. We know you want to, you know, make the right choices. That's your default position for all children. But do you have then the skill sets to be able to do that? And there are a number of skills that, you know, I think are more important than others. And two that I would stress, one would be language. And
yes, I agree.
I think myself, as many, I'm guilty as this as anybody, is that I overestimate the ability of my kids when it comes to communication, right? Because I'm in a hurry and I'm rushing, you know, I sort of talk to them as an adult more or less.
And
I do. Yeah, I do. I think there is.
The other person knows things, but really they don't come out programmed. We got to help them learn these skills so that they can live in a world where they can communicate well.
Correct. Yeah. And it's, you know, one of the question was, how long does it take for a kid to process language?
Oh,
it's much longer than you. It's much longer than an adult. So, you know, there's a little trick to, you know, the 30 second trick to, you know, wait 30 seconds before you jump in, give them time to process what you've said. And 30 seconds, if you're sitting there on the sofa with your kid, feels like an eternity. Right.
Yeah.
But to start with, you know, to give them that chance to first digest what you said, but then also get their own feelings, their own thoughts in place before you're already jumping to the next part of your process because you're in a rush, because you know, you've got all these emails or whatever, your phone's beeping, all things to be done. So you're trying to rush this decision through with the child on your time schedule and not theirs. So I think, you know, if we can step down and say, no, you know, I really need to ensure that the communication happens at their level in a way that they can process the information, that they can deal with the cognitive skills that they
processing
need to do.
Of the, yeah.
Yeah. And that's specifically important when it comes to emotional intelligence, because right? That's hard for us even as adults to understand, right? What are we feeling?
Emotional intelligence is five components that take a series of hundreds of hours to really get good at.
Yeah, and we need as parents to obviously our own skills to ensure that, you know, we ourselves have a reasonable skill at understanding our own emotions, but also the emotions of others and our impact of what we do or say on other people's emotions. So not only picking up on our own, but how do our kids react? What's really behind that when we behave in a certain way? So I think, for an example I always give is that, you know, when you talk about the awareness of the emotion, I think a lot of parents jump to the conclusion that their kids are angry. What are you angry about? What are you upset about? And that's not really necessarily the point. It may be that they're feeling the emotion of anxiety, but they don't know how to understand that and deal with that. So they sort of frame it in a reference of anger, right? And that takes you down the wrong path when you're trying to understand what was the trigger behind this. How can we deal with this if this same situation comes up later? If you've already boxed this as my kid was angry,
Yeah.
When no, my kid was anxious, but they didn't know how to express that properly. So
label the emotion, which takes a very long time to learn how to label, unless you're working on facial expressions from age 3 and it's a sad face. What emotions, what makes you sad? And you have to really work at that.
Like, we do.
We had a book of emotions that we actually made up on our own with voices. And then we found other books that were available to work on emotions.
Yeah. And that's so important, as I say, both for ourselves as well as for the children, because it becomes down to a trick really at the end of the day of preempting and sort of understanding how is this scenario going to play out if I go down this conversation with this child, or if we go down this behavior pattern, that's going to trigger
it. Yeah, you will.
Yeah. And to help the child understand that they're being triggered, but they then have the power to change the dominoes, right? To not repeat that pattern. But it's a long process. Believe it's there's a joy super if you take it on with your child as a game, as a way of learning it together, right? This is fun, right? Learning about emotions can be fun, right? Let's do it charades. Let's do it whatever way you're going to do it to make them feel that, hey, you know, I understand it's my mom's
surface. Or like a heads up game or anything like looking at someone's face and determining those emotional features associated with that emotion. It was fun. Like heads up, you can put a different face on it. We're teaching games to teachers.
Right.
How to teach emotion. The teachers pretty much nail it all, but these are just ways in which we can work with emotional intelligence, but at a younger age. Andrew, I thought maybe we could wind up here for our parents. You have some wonderful strategies for them to use the Joyful Art and Science Initiative at home. So, and try to implement in their day. What would be your two to three strategies that you would like, you know, parents just sort of like play around with and see how they work today? What would you suggest?
What would I suggest for that? I mean, in no particular order, but I would definitely
me three. Because I like them.
Yeah, I know. I definitely say the first one is to work on developing your own superpowers in parallel to developing those for your kids.
Okay.
So this parenting is not about your kids. It's about you as an individual, as a parent.
Yeah.
And so, you know, look at our superpowers, choose the ones that you need to develop or desire to develop for yourself on your own joyful living journey.
Right.
And focus on developing the skills related to that and not the outcome. So don't focus on anxiety or depression or obesity, but focus on what are the skills that you can use to help you either prevent or to recover from these challenges. Okay. So that would be the first one.
Okay.
The second one, I suppose I would say to be transparent, authentic, and open with your kids, but in a way that they understand.
Right.
You know, don't turn this into some sort of scientific experiment on them.
No, it's about connecting.
It is. It's about connecting on their level.
Communicate at their stage of life.
Correct. So this would be very different to a 3-year-old as to a 13-year-old in terms of how you play it out, but the concept's the same.
Yeah.
That you're going on this journey together to how can we as a family, you know, live more joyfully? How can we all as a family have better well-being? How can we all have more fun? How can we all belong? How can we have a more positive impact on, you know, our neighborhood, on our extended family, on strangers, on the planet,
right?
So you turn it into that, but the way you do it is going to change, obviously, for different. But I think one way that works for all ages is to turn it into a what we call a Joy Superpowers weekly game.
Okay.
So, and there's different ways you could do it, but the basic sort of idea would be to list the family members across the top, for example, on a piece of paper or on a chalkboard, something like that. And then, you know, link down the sides the four pillars. So well-being, belonging, fun, and impact. And you basically work out a scale. You're gonna give it a go. Tell me how it goes.
I'm gonna give it a go right now.
Tell me how it goes. Yes, so
you
together as a family, you choose the scale you want to use, right? Okay. So for little kids, it's probably gonna be a smiley face. Just the three, am I feeling a smiley face, just a blank face, or am I sort of crying face, sad face? Mm-hmm. Or for, you know, older children, it could be on a 1 to 10 points of 1 to 10. What's how are you face? Feeling?
They're like, always you're like, yeah, mom. And they're doing me this little rap thing now. I'm like, uh-huh. I don't even know if I have, like, what is that emoji?
Probably better to move on with those kids to a numeric scale for this. Wow. And say, on a scale of 1 to 10 kids, how are you feeling this week? How was this week for your well-being? Right? How was this week for your fun? Did you have fun this week? And if all the family do that, and then over one meal over the weekend, say, you consciously sit down and get this bit of paper out, look at the chalkboard, and say, hey, you know, where did we succeed last week? Where did we as a family struggle? You know, yeah, Sharon, you know, our younger daughter, she didn't have much fun last week, right? Okay, let's make sure this week we build something into our schedule that adds fun to Sharon. Sharon, what do you love to do, right? It's your special week next week. Uh-huh. You know, Tom's didn't sleep very well last week, got exam. Okay, let's look next week at different tips and tricks we can do to improve your superpower of sleep. Why don't we all do it while we're there? Because we can all do with benefit with this. So, you know, you then have this little game saying, okay, well, next week, see who's going to be the best sleeper. You know, and see how you can all develop your own sleeping skills. Okay, we're all going to leave our devices.
I like this.
We're all going to leave our devices charging in the living room downstairs. You know, we're not going to be the parents who say to the kids, don't take your phone to bed. And then we're under the sheets, right? Looking until they come in, and then we hide our own phone. So we don't want to be that parent.
No,
right? So, you know, right. And we all get points and a reward, you know, and whatever works for your family, you know, you can do different ways of doing this. But the whole concept
more of a discussion, I think.
Yeah.
And it'll be more also of like, who wants to plan? You get to plan the meal next week on Wednesday.
Right.
Because we have one, you know, and just little things. I try to go for simple.
Mm.
Like, okay, you want to go fishing? Okay, then we'll go fishing. We'll all go down to the river and we'll go. But I really, really like that.
It's right. And then for belonging, you know, if somebody struggle with belonging, say, okay, well, you know, you can have a sleepover next weekend, or you could let's go and see grandma. Right, we haven't visited grandma for a few weeks. That's going to help our belonging, right? She's going to tell us all her old stories of her childhood.
Let's take grandma to a meal, you know.
You know, so and as you say, you have a conversation, but you can have these same conversations with young kids as well, but you just do it differently. You take it to their level, right? You take it to their level. And so I think that's the thing anybody can implement and use on a weekly basis, just as a barometer. You know, it's like you check the weather, check how your temperature
is. Like where you're like, let's just feel these vibes out. Where are we? Are we too low? Is there more children sort of down here?
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of go with that in my house. We're always doing I do a meter check.
Right.
Where
include yourself in it, right? Because, you know, if you had a bad week at work, you know, your belonging score goes down, and you explain to your kids, hey, and then they understand why you're a bit ratty, why you're a bit short, you know, over dinner on Thursday.
Like that.
Right.
Brilliant.
You know,
well, and thank you so much for sharing all of these wonderful initiatives and goals and ideas and applications, because it is amazing, I think, to share with parents these tools that are almost like just living a happier way of living, right? It's just, it's so nice. Like, they're simple. It's very simple. There's no money involved.
Right.
And I really like that, because we live in such a materialistic society. Mm. Our kids today know more about labels of clothing than they do about plants and trees.
Right.
And that's a hard thing for me to examine right now, because I'm such an environmentalist. And our kids like use an app that goes and finds plants and flowers, and they have to figure out what they are. And I'm trying to bridge technology a little bit with nature and how we use it properly. But I really like the joy of it, because we go fishing a lot. We're in the rivers a lot. And then here my son goes fishing.
Mm.
This guy beside him dumps his garbage out of his car.
Wow.
And leaves it. My son was so mad. I said, I understand that you're mad. I understand that you can't control what other people do. However, what could you do right now to fix this problem?
Mm.
He went over, got a garbage bag, gloves on, picked it up. He goes, you know, next time he sees him, he goes, oh, I have a garbage bag if you need one.
Right.
Just carry it with you and just say that. Right. Yeah. But he was really angry. He's like, this is my lake. I'm trying to, you know, catch these fish. These fish need good water, and they're putting that process together, right? You and I would have probably dealt with that a little differently,
right,
a little bit more assertively but kindly.
Mm.
He was just upset,
and that's good in a way, you know. I think, and that's why we talk about joy as a state of being which encompasses all emotions. That, you know, if a kid wants to get angry at some injustice, you know, that's fine.
Yeah, it's exactly what it was. He was like,
that's fine. And then to help him, as you did wonderfully, find his own solution to that, and not just, you know, you go and get the gloves and take it.
Oh, no, I'm like, what are you going
to do? And that was such a wonderful empowerment. You empowered him to do that, and to, you know, change that anger into something positive.
Yeah, I said, well, we need to leave it the same way that we came to it. So what's our rule?
Right. Yeah, and you know,
thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for tuning in from so far away and on your vacation. And we tried to work to get together to bring this opportunity to listeners and this this whole concept. So where, Andrew, can people find you?
Find us very easily.
Okay.
Because if you just type the art and science of joy, we're the only people you'll find. So there's no confusion to doing that. So whatever channel you go on,
and
typing Art and Science of Joy, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, website, Spotify, Google, Amazon Prime, wherever you go, you'll find us. So that's really, really simple. And we'd love to have you connect, obviously, everybody who's listening, and to share back with us your experiences and what superpowers you would like to see, you know, because we're always looking for new things that we could cover in this. And you know, so some of your listeners say, hey, yeah,
well, they all know about superpowers because that's what we teach kids to say in their mantras at night,
right?
To embellish their, like, to really get their practice of I am fast, I am strong, and have those superpowers before bed, because they help us wake up and feel better.
They do, and it's with an S, right? Don't fall into the trap that everybody only has one superpower. We're not in a Marvel comic strip here. You know,
you got one that feels like a cheetah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we've got multiple strings and we can change them. That's our choice. That's our power to do that.
Yeah. And thank you so much for being here today from the Art of Joy, Andrew. And I hope that we can collaborate in the future. I think we have many more topics to cover for parents and for children, actually. I hope we can collaborate a lot more.
Yeah, no, definitely, Larissa. You know, thank you so, so much for giving me this opportunity to come and talk to you and hopefully inspire your listeners to live a bit more joyfully.
We will. So it's going to
That's happen. The best. And I love that idea of let's not only for parents, but let's focus on the kids as well. So let's see how we can help engage them on developing their joy superpowers.
Well, super. And thank you for tuning into the Parent Talk today, folks. We'll see you soon.